Welcome to the Down and Dirty Podcast, the ultimate guide to modern midlife dating. I'm your host, Celeste Moore, and I'm here to help you navigate the challenges of today's dating world. Think of me as your female version of Hitch, but better. With over 16 years of experience as a certified image consultant and dating coach, I've got the inside scoop on what women want. In this podcast, we're diving deep into the world of healthy masculinity and modern dating. It's a fast-changing industry, and here you'll find personal stories, expert insights, and candid conversations that will empower you to take control of your dating life. There's never been a better time to achieve your desired outcome, whether it's marriage, finding a significant other, securing a life partner, or simply regaining your dating confidence. We're here with you twice a week to explore the viewpoints and challenges in today's dating arena that resonate with every man seeking dating success and love. So let's dive into today's episode. We've got an exciting discussion lined up for you. Get ready for the double D's of dating, where dating dilemmas turn into dating triumphs. Welcome everybody to another episode of the Down and Dirty Podcast. I'm your host, Celeste Moore, and I'm super excited to jump into an exciting conversation with my guest today. Before I jump into the episode, I want to tell you about him. His name is Tony Endelman, and he is an author, popular self-help blogger, a certified transformational life coach, and certified happiness trainer. He is also one of Dr. Robert Glover's elite certified No More Mr. Nice Guy coaches. Tony recently released a book, The Big Stick, Collected and Applied Wisdom from the Teachings of Dr. Robert Glover, encapsulates nearly 40 years of wisdom put forth by Dr. Glover. He's born and raised in Omaha, Nebraska. Tony Nallows and Nolans. His humorous and unconventional self-help has been featured in the Huffington Post, Yahoo, Lifehack, Mindvalley, Thought Catalog, Thrive Global, Tiny Buddha, and The Good Men Project. In his coaching business, Tony works with clients both one-on-one and through his group coaching program for men, Integrated Man University. Welcome, Tony. Thank you for being on today's show.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Yes.
By the way, never say Nolans if you come down here. Locals will tear you apart for that.
Really? I heard from locals that's how I should say it. Correct me.
Well, maybe. I've never heard that. I've been here almost a decade, and everyone I met's pretty picky about the language you use down here. So
how do you say it?
As far as I know, Nolans is frowned upon.
Oh, okay. Correct me. But, how would you say it?
No, I think you're supposed to say New Orleans, but
New Orleans. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm
going to
say,
wrong.
You know what? I'm going to say New Orleans.
I'm not a native, so I'll get torn apart for being a transplant. So
I actually got torn apart because I didn't say it that way. And so I was like, okay, you live there, grew up there. Oh, but you know what? Potato, potato. Because none of us are from there. So anybody that's listening that's from there, send me a DM and tell me how it's
I would never tear you apart. I'm just warning you.
Okay. Well, I will not come down there and say it like that.
All right.
So I know that on your website, you give a beautiful story because you're such an amazing writer. You really are just very straightforward. And I love that. I think a lot of men resonate with that as well.
Well, thank you.
But for those listening here today, could you tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got to become and be a relationship coach and work with Dr. Robert Glover? Pretty amazing.
Yeah, of course. I actually hate to refer to myself as any sort of relationship coach, but
okay. So you're more of a transformational life coach?
Yeah. I mean, relationship coaching is a big part of what I do, but relationships are inherently complicated and messy. You know,
yes, I agree.
I can't pretend to figure them out all the time, but I do what I can. But yeah, my journey, it's quite a long one. I'll try and condense it as much as I can. But, you know, I was born and raised in Omaha, Nebraska. It's my hometown. And in my 20s, I mean, the long and short of it, I was quite unhappy. I was pretty miserable. I was dealing with a lot of depression, anxiety, and a whole, like, shitstorm of events kind of happened right around my 30th birthday. I published a humor book that didn't sell. I detested what I was doing for work. I hated my 9-to-5 job. I tried starting a marketing company that failed. I ruined a number of friendships. I had pretty much zero romantic dating prospects. And also, right before I turned 30, my father passed away suddenly and unexpectedly while he was working out at the gym. And he was like the picture of health. Didn't smoke, didn't drink, ate right, worked out every day. I mean, if anybody was going to live to be 100, I thought it would be my dad. And he basically just dropped dead at the gym one day. And that was a real shock, not just to my family, to our whole community, because, you know, he was very beloved. Everybody loved my dad. And after that happened, it did initially kind of send me spiraling further into depression. But ultimately, my father's passing, I mean, it woke me up. It really knocked me on my ass. And it made me realize, geez, this shit's unpredictable. And what am I doing? You only get one life. It could end at any minute. And I'm just sitting here in my apartment in Omaha and miserable, you know? And if I don't make some changes, some like big major changes, I'm just going to sit here and rot, basically. That's how I felt. And so I started doing things that I found really scary, that made me really uncomfortable, but I started making some big changes in my life. The first big change I made was while I was going down the self-help rabbit hole, I stumbled across a model of neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP, which I had no idea what the fuck NLP was, but it just, you know, again, I was going down that self-help rabbit hole, and this model of NLP said, well, there are 6 levels of human change and transformation, and the first and easiest and outermost level is change your environment. And so I thought, well, shit, why not start there? And so I moved to New Orleans, or Nolens, where I live now. And I had fallen madly in love with New Orleans on this solo road trip that I'd taken. It was just like, I couldn't stop thinking about New Orleans. Like I'd spent like 10 seconds here and I was just like, holy shit, I have to live there. And so I packed up my stuff and rented a U-Haul and moved down. And so was that a panacea for all my woes? Of course not. Like, kind of wherever you go, there you are type of thing. But it was a real good start. But when I got to New Orleans, I started repeating a lot of the same patterns. I took another toxic job that I hated. I started repeating the same dating and relationship patterns. And it was actually, I started dating this woman who I just became infatuated with. And she dumped me very, very, very cruelly. And that was ultimately what led me to Dr. Glover's work. And ultimately what led me to become a coach was a heartbreak, which seems to be a catalyst for a lot of people, for a lot of different things. But for me, this woman just kicked my ass to the curb. And, you know, in the past, that wasn't the first time that that had happened. It wasn't the first time a woman had unremorsefully tossed me from her life, but this time around, I just thought, okay, something's going on with me. Like, you know, because in the past, I would always dismiss the woman as, oh, she's crazy, or she's a bitch, or she's a narcissist, or whatever. We kind of throw those terms around and tend to blame other people. But this time around, I'm just like, okay, there's no way I've dated 6 narcissists in a row. Like, what's the common denominator here? It's me. Something's going on with me. And so I really started, I started diving within and examining my own behavior and my own patterns. And that's what led me to, again, that's what led me to Dr. Glover's work. And then that's how I got hooked up with him. And he's a great friend and the greatest mentor in my life. But yeah, then I pursued coaching because I'd always been fascinated by psychology and self-development anyway. And I always wanted to just be an entrepreneur and do my own thing. So I started making this career pivot. Mm-hmm. And so I started my coaching business on the side like 8 years ago while I still had a day job. And then ultimately just upped and quit my day job. And I've been a full-time coach, writer, online entrepreneur for, I don't know, five or six years now. So that is what turned out to be not the very condensed version. But
no, that was very condensed. Well, thank you for sharing. And what you did was really brave. What you did was really, people think about it all the time. Like, I need to make changes, or I need to look at the common denominator. Yeah. Oh, maybe it's me. Looking at yourself can be really difficult. I've done that a few times in my life. Yeah.
Well, I'll say two things to that. I appreciate you calling me brave, but, you know, I hesitate to use that word because when I was doing these things, particularly like when I quit my job, you know, I was like, okay, what's scarier? Like going after what I really want and like maybe taking a chance and believing in myself. And yeah, maybe venturing into the unknown and stepping outside my comfort zone and facing some of my fears, pretty scary. Or like sitting in this fucking cubicle for the rest of my life, being miserable. That to me was way scarier.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate what you're saying. And maybe what I did does require a certain amount of courage, but to me, the alternative was just way more frightening.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody wants to, I mean, like you said, you saw with your own father, which I, again, my condolences, that I can't imagine. I haven't lost a parent yet, but to know when you lose somebody who is that close in your life, to know that life is truly, truly short, and that was able to move you to say, probably, like, no, living in this effing misery, right, is going to like be worse than stepping out to the unknown. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. And the other thing you said about kind of looking within and examining your own behavior. Yeah, that is tough. I mean, you have to come to terms with a lot of your faulty behaviors and beliefs and paradigms, and you have to really get brutally honest with yourself, but you can't make changes in your life if you don't do that first, you know? And
right.
You know, that's the thing about Dr. Glover's book, No More Mr. Nice Guy. It's very confronting, you know? I mean, and that's my new book, The Big Stick. That's why I called it The Big Stick, because literally every guy who reaches out to me, they all say the same thing. Well, I read Dr. Glover's work and it was the big fucking stick upside my head that I needed. You know? So it is very confronting, but
yeah.
Again, that's the first step towards, you know, transformation and changing your life.
Yeah.
Is getting really honest with yourself about, you know, what your shortcomings are and what your faulty beliefs are and what your problematic behaviors are and what you want to change. You know, you have to be really honest with yourself about that stuff.
Yeah, that literally is probably the hardest. I remember going through a leadership training years ago, like 17 years ago, and very, very brutally honest, but you had a very small group and they would tell you how they saw you. And you might think, oh, I'm hiding this. I can cover it up well. Like, I don't come across this way. And when then you have 30 plus people all say the same thing, you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
That's fucking hard. That, like, but to know the reality, right? Because we tell ourselves stories in our head and like really what we think is going on is really not the case. So, but then like, then owning that, right? That's
sure.
I know you said it doesn't take, or maybe bravery is not the word, but that takes courage. That takes action steps. You're not going to go past that if you don't start there. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, like you mentioned, people telling you how you are or how they see you, you know, mm-hmm. like I wrote an essay, probably one of my most popular essays on my site, is called How to Not Be the Biggest Fucking Downer on the Planet. And it's about my battle with depression, but like everybody kept telling me, like, dude, you're the biggest fucking downer on the planet.
Aww.
And they weren't saying it to be mean. They were saying it like out of love and concern. But mm-hmm. I had friends literally say to me, dude, you're a fucking downer, you know? And honestly, you need friends like that. You need people to point that kind of shit out, or, mm-hmm. you know, because, yeah, I did experience a lot of depression, but I thought, oh, maybe I'm pretty good at hiding it, you know? But when enough of my friends told me, dude, you're a downer, like, it made me go, okay, maybe I need to do something about this. Because I don't want to be the guy who brings everyone down, you know? I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. Well, I completely understand depression and anxiety. There's been many moments in my life where I've dealt with that. So I think in itself, the depression and anxiety is also to look at that and to work, because it takes work. It doesn't take just like, oh yeah, I'm depressed, here's a pill or something, right?
Oh, totally. That's one of the things I talk about in the essay, is like, I don't think happiness is just something you can turn on. But that's what you hear from a lot of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just think positive, choose happy. It's like, well, that's what happy people say. But you can choose to do the work, you know? You can choose to do the work. So, and that's what I did. I didn't just choose happy, but I did go, okay, I'm making an unbreakable promise to myself to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to commit to doing the work, whatever it takes.
Did you write that down? Did you say it out loud to yourself? Or did you tell other people that statement? Or was it just in your head?
It was in my head. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was in my head. Maybe I might have told my mom too. Like,
yeah,
I promise I'm going to figure this out, you know, but it was in my head. Okay. Yeah.
I only ask that because I've been told over and over, the more you like, they visually write it or say it out loud or tell someone, the more it holds, I guess. Because I've told myself, oh, I'm going to wake up at 5 every morning. I don't know, just throwing something out there, right?
And I'm like,
news, right? But it's like in my calendar or something, right? It holds more to myself. I was just curious.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of power in writing things down. You know, I've tried to start the habit of journaling, and I've never been able to stick with it, but I do believe in, like, you know, I have a big whiteboard with all my goals for the year. I make a vision board every year. I do put things down or put things out into the universe for sure.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's really important. I don't know. I think maybe it's something about seeing it that, I don't know, stays in your brain longer. I don't know.
Well, it's just staring me in the face every day. Like, you know what I mean? It's just my whiteboard, especially. It's just like staring me in the face every day. And it's a constant reminder of what my mission is, you know?
Right. And so I know that, you know, you do talk a lot about overcoming depression, anxiety. So if your client comes to you, do you know how to like guide them with this? Is there something that you can give them, exercises? I mean, I know you're not a therapist and a counselor, but are there exercises that you help them through this process?
Yeah, well, you're right. I'm not a therapist or a doctor. So if somebody did come to me, and it's happened on occasion where somebody mm-hmm. came to me and they were, you know, like in suicidal despair, I cannot take that person on as a client, you know?
Right.
I work mostly in my coaching business now. It's probably 95% nice guys, quote unquote, nice guys.
Okay.
Who read Dr. Glover's book. And I have found that pretty much all nice guys, including me, have this kind of like low grade chronic, like dull depression that's kind of always with them. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a whole host of journal exercises and activities, missions and homework assignments I give these guys to help them. I think, to be honest, I think what seems to me to be the common denominator amongst these men is that They just overthink and overanalyze the shit out of everything, which causes them to feel depressed and anxious. And a lot of them have self-limiting beliefs. You know, I mean, the nice guy syndrome is fundamentally rooted in toxic shame, which is, you know, just the belief, the inaccurately internalized belief that I'm not okay just as I am. And so that's how a lot of these guys think. They think they're not okay just as they are. They think they're unlovable or defective in some way. Plus, like I said, they kind of overthink and overanalyze the shit out of everything. So I don't know, just to give you a short list, I guess. First of all, I recommend meditation to everyone and anyone. Meditation completely changed my life. It is the simplest and most effective tool I know of to just combat your monkey mind. So I try and get these guys to start meditating as quickly as possible. One of the things that Dr. Glover is so adamant about in his work that I try and hammer home is like, you can't do any of this work alone. So you cannot overcome toxic shame. You cannot overcome your low-grade depression, your anxiety, your self-limiting beliefs, your nice guy syndrome. You can't do any of that shit alone. So find a coach, find a mentor, you know, or better yet, find a group, like find a men's group of like safe people, ideally a group of other men who you can reveal yourself to and who you can relate to. And these other men are there to support you and lift you up and encourage you and give you more accurate feedback about the bullshit stories you're telling yourself.
Yeah.
Also some of the basics, eat healthier, get some exercise. I also tell guys, get the fuck off the internet.
Yeah.
Or be really, really mindful about the content you're consuming on the internet, because a lot of these guys are just, and I was guilty of this too. We're just wasting our time. We're just doom scrolling on the internet, or, you know, obsessing over women we'll never meet on Instagram, or playing video games, or jerking off to porn, you know, all this like junk food behavior that just doesn't serve us at all. And that is honestly really bad for the psyche, you know?
Yeah.
So those are kind of some of the basic things I try and get guys to do right off the bat, you know? Yeah. And then I, of course, work with them on like working at becoming the observer of your thoughts, not the believer of them. So really learning to kind of step outside yourself and, again, observe the bullshit stories you're telling yourself and learning how to realize they're bullshit. Because most of the stories we tell ourselves are bullshit, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
And that's the problem. We believe those stories, you know, but they're not true, you know?
Yeah.
So I work with guys on just learning how to, again, be the observer of their thoughts, not the believer of them. I'm also a big believer in like letting go of attachment to outcome.
Kind of huge.
Rooted in Buddhism, but I guess sort of that subtle art of not giving a fuck sort of thing.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, letting go of attachment to outcome, learning to look at the world more abundantly. Those two are huge too when it comes to like dating and relationships.
For just sure. Like
letting go of attachment, thinking more abundantly, learning to master the art of moving on.
So crazy you just said that, because I literally just recorded a very quick solo episode, and it was literally about that. It's about how Valentine's Day, it's one of the things that everybody puts so much pressure on. It's got to be perfect and the outcome's going to be like this. And I experienced a date one time that he literally set everything up to be like his vision of this perfect date.
Right.
Number one, there's no perfect date. But number two, something, it was like, I don't remember what went wrong. It was like the timing was off. Something, it was so little that it threw him all out of whack. He was sitting in his emotions. He was, I don't want to say petty, but he was acting like a child. You know, it was just like it was just like layer after layer after layer of this, like, it could have been such a beautiful thing if you didn't attach this perfection to the outcome of this date. And then in the end, nobody was getting laid and nobody was having fun because we were all, I was pissed and he was pissed and he was being stupid. It was just like this domino effect.
Sure.
So I love that you talk and
thought. And I'm sure, if he would have just let it go and laughed at himself, you would have actually found that maybe even more attractive.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? So yeah, that's just such a key.
But yeah, I mean, if you're going to date in 2024, you've got to learn to master the art of moving on, because you're going to have to endure a lot of bullshit, a lot of bad behavior, and, you know, a lot of people who aren't the right fit for you. And you've got to learn to move on from those experiences.
I think that's so important, like what you're saying and what you're talking about. It's like, you know, when guys are dealing with rejection, and it's so great that you get rejected because that person's not for you. You don't know why, what's going on, why they said no, or why it's not working out. I mean, that just gives you another, like, go put yourself in the right direction to meet the person who you're supposed to meet. That's what I think. And I know guys take it so tough and so hard. Nobody likes to be rejected, but I think if you take the personal aspect out of it.
Sure.
And look at it as more of a rejection. Positive,
I mean, rejection in and of itself doesn't hurt. I mean, it's the stories we attach to. I mean, how can somebody reject you? Like, how can a complete stranger reject you? They can't. They don't know you. They don't know anything about you. And so it's literally just, you know, they are not interested in interacting with you at that moment. It's got nothing to do with you.
Right.
It's one of the most powerful exercises I give to guys, which, I mean, I stole straight from Dr. Glover, but the exercise is go out and get rejected. That's what I tell them. Go out and get rejected. You know, go out and talk to five different women and try to get rejected. Now, that doesn't mean do anything offensive or creepy or act like an asshole, but it means be bold, be confident, and let go of any attachment to outcome and just be you. And what happens is they almost never get rejected all five times.
You know?
And when they do get rejected, they go, oh, that wasn't so bad. It wasn't that big of a deal. You know,
I'm still standing. I'm still breathing.
Like I've never, like nobody's ever, I've never heard of like a man like getting punched in the face or getting a drink thrown at him, or I've never even heard of a man like being told to like fuck off. Like it's always just like, you know, women like to be approached. They like,
yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Like, you know that movie Hitch with Will Smith?
Yes.
Well, okay. You know the very first line of that movie where Will Smith is narrating and he goes, no woman wakes up and thinks, gee, I hope I don't get swept off my feet today, you know? And it's like, women want to be approached, you know? They want a cool, calm, confident, charming, funny, interesting guy to come sweep them off their feet, you know?
Yes, we do.
And so go take a chance. And if they're not interested, again, nothing bad will happen. It's not going to hurt. They will simply say, oh, I'm sorry, I have a boyfriend, or I'm busy, or something, you know?
Right.
They're always polite about it, you know?
Well, because the guys you're talking to aren't D-bags, you know? I mean, they're...
Right, right. Assuming the guy is a normal, decent human being.
Correct. Yeah. No, I love that. And I think that your answer is always going to be no if you don't ask too. So it's like, you're always going to wonder in your head, oh, maybe I should have talked to her. You know, you've had those moments. I know I have. Like someone passes, makes eye contact with you, and you're like, oh my God. Like I can feel something, or I'm attracted, or something happens, and you let that shit go by. And you
every
never
day
see
of my life.
Again.
Yeah. Happens every day. Yeah. Every
and
day.
You get pissed off at yourself because why didn't you say something?
Yeah. But, you know, it's like going back to what we were talking about earlier with quitting your job or taking a chance on yourself. It's like, what's the alternative? You know, you could say hi to that woman or that beautiful stranger, and it could be the next love of your life, or you let it pass by and kick yourself the rest of the day, and you stay stuck in that pattern of never doing anything. So you can't think your way out of this shit. You've got to take action.
Yeah, that's really powerful too. And it's a muscle, guys. Like, you have to just practice and just do the things that make you uncomfortable. Like, I love Goggins, and he's just, I don't know if he was the one who came up with it, but like, get comfortable with being uncomfortable, like in every aspect. It's the only way you're going to grow.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just, it always stuck in my head, especially when I met him. I was like, stay hard, you know? It's just, yeah. Like, he's just like,
I mean, he's an alien or something, but
I know. He worked out next to me.
He's on another level. He's on another level.
Yeah. Well, like, imagine yourself, normal me, working out next to him for an hour and just watching him and going like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like,
yeah. I don't know if any of us are equipped to get to Goggins level, but something to strive for nonetheless.
Well, I just think what it means is, like, you know, the only way that we're going to change our lives and the guy's lives, right? The only way that you're going to make something different is by changing your patterns. And I'm sure that's something that you were learning as you said you repeated the patterns that you in your relationships when you moved down to New Orleans.
Yeah.
So what changed for you other than reading Dr. Glover's book? Like, what were you were like, okay, after the breakup, I think you talked a little about exploring your sexuality. There was some shame around that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, yeah, reading No More Mr. Nice Guy was a real eye opener. I also read a book called Attached about attachment theory, which was a real eye opener. And then getting dumped in the way I did by this woman was a real eye opener. I mean, she sent me like the most vicious text message I've ever got in my life. And it did a number on me, you know, and it made me go, this can't keep happening. And so, but you're right. Yeah. I had a lot of insecurities and shame around sex and sexuality and dating and relationships. And so, yeah, like when I moved to New Orleans, that was one of the things I told myself I was going to do was work on all that, get more comfortable with my sexuality and being a sexual person. I was quite a late bloomer. I was ignored by women growing up. So I would assume that's where a lot of that comes from, just the shame and the insecurity. But anyway, yeah, when I got to New Orleans, I really, I don't know how to put it, but I became kind of a man whore. I dated a lot and I sowed all my wild oats, so to speak, and fulfilled all my fantasies and just tried to have as many experiences as I could. And I'm not necessarily recommending that as a path to take, but that's the path that I took, and it served a very healthy purpose for me. You know, I'm not necessarily like proud of all this stuff I did, or I'm definitely not like bragging about it, but again, for me, it like needed to happen. It was the only way that I was going to get over all my shame and insecurity was to go out and have all these experiences. That was a big thing for me.
But I think that's very normal and healthy to have sexual exploration, and there should be no shame on that in itself. And however you wanted to do that,
it's normal and healthy too, but
yeah,
sadly our society is so fucking schizophrenic about sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sex is everywhere. We're bombarded with sexual stimuli and we're all sexual beings, and yet it's still like taboo, and yet we're still told, hey, sex is dirty and nasty and save it for the one you love. Like, people still grow up with those messages. And so how do you expect to grow up having a healthy, fulfilling sex life when you internalize all these messages growing up, and sex which is normal and healthy, gets crosswired with things like anxiety and shame and secrecy.
I mean, it stems a lot from religion, stems a lot from the normal heteronorm hierarchy in society. And there's a lot that when I grew up, there wasn't the internet, you know, and how did I find things out? It wasn't not normal. That was just very weird to see. I think there was one girl in my high school that was like bisexual woman. And I was like, you know, this is so weird. Why am I feeling certain feelings right now? You know?
Right. Well, like Dr. Glover, for example, in his workshops, he'll ask guys, he'll say like, what was your first sexual experience? You know? Mm-hmm. And he'll say like, and so whatever it was, you know, could be the first time you, your first kiss, you know, maybe it was like, you show me yours, I'll show you mine with the neighbor. You know, maybe you found your dad's porn, like whatever it was, think of your first sexual experience. And then he'll say, okay, now, was it out in the open? Was it celebrated? Did you go to your parents and tell them about it? And were they like, that's great. That's a milestone in development. Let's go get pizza. Or was it hidden? Was it shame-filled? Was it secretive? Was it, you know, anxiety inducing? And for literally 99.9% of people, our first sexual experience was hidden and secretive and filled with shame and anxiety, you know? And so sex gets crosswired with those kinds of things.
Yeah. That's really fascinating because, yeah, it does kind of set the tone. And like, I'm going to say it again, a lot of our society, there's a religion base to growing up or you were in a city that was largely religious based. And so, you know, what the Bible says or what this says, you know, save sex for marriage. And, you know, our sexual education was like, just don't get pregnant. You know, here's a condom. Like, and this is you get a period. And it's very, you know, the education was so limited. And right. So a lot of it was secretive. That makes just so much sense.
Yeah. I mean, thank God I wasn't religious growing up.
But,
that's a huge part of it. You know, messages from religion, from society, from parents, you know, we get these messages growing up that just, they're not accurate, you know?
Right.
But we internalize them and then you know, again, sex gets crosswired with things like secrecy and shame and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then we carry that into adulthood.
Yeah. Well, I think it's educating again on sexuality. And I'm glad that you do that too. I've always been a very non-judgmental person when it comes to that space, because whatever your likes and desires are, as long as you're not harming somebody, then have fun, you know, as long as it's consensual.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? Whatever you're into, there's somebody else out there who's into it too. Everybody's got their thing. So
for sure. I think these are my biggest podcasts, like the most downloaded. It's all about sex. Anything that has to do with sex. People, you know, it's amazing how, like I said, I think I had this conversation earlier today with somebody and I was like, yeah, it's still like taboo, which is just crazy to me. I mean, we're 2024.
It is crazy. I mean, that's why we were put on this earth. Well, that's how we are on this earth, first of all.
Yes, for sure.
Our parents and everybody before them had sex. That's why we're here. And that's how we're here. And then we're here to do basically Mother Nature's bidding. We're all here to reproduce. Mm-hmm. Essentially, we're all here to have sex. We're sexual creatures.
Yeah.
And to think that it's not normal and healthy and wonderful. Yeah, it's crazy. To me, but
yeah. Well, there's a lot of shame and stigma and work to be done around that area. And hey, if we can be part of the healing process, and you know,
yeah,
I'm all for it. So,
yeah, for sure.
I love that. Well, I love your story, and I think it's so important for guys to hear. Oh, wait, I'm not finished, but I just remember it just literally came to my head. Tell me about your program that you have for your Integrated Man University. I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah. Well, of course. Well, certainly back to you can't do this work alone. Here, this is my heart and soul into building this program. And as amazing as Dr. Glover's book is, No More Mr. Nice Guy, a lot of people read it and go, okay, what's next? You know, what do I do next? And so when I created Integrated Man University, that was kind of what I was thinking is like, if No More Mr. Nice Guy is like high school for nice guys, Integrated Man University is like the undergraduate and postgraduate work. So it's a really comprehensive online course that I created. So there's like over 100 video lessons that cover, you know, it runs the gamut. It covers, you know, every area of life, you know, from nice guy syndrome to attraction, dating, relationships, heartbreak, sex, happiness, career success. So it runs the gamut of subject matter. But the best part about it is you immediately become part of this tribe of men. So we have group calls every week. So that's the not doing it alone part component of it, right? Mm-hmm. So any guy who joins my program, like, immediately becomes part of this cohort or tribe of men, and they can hop on the group calls every week. And it's just great. It's an amazing group of guys. And, you know, again, we get on the horn every week on Zoom, and there's like a group therapy aspect to it. You know, we're all revealing ourselves to each other and sharing what's going on and getting support and encouragement, feedback from other guys. But there's also like, sometimes we just shoot the shit, you know, and joke around. And that's really important too, because, you know, men are, I don't want to say universally, but men are lonely. You know, I'm sure you've seen the articles, right? Like, I mean, male loneliness is a silent epidemic. Loneliness is killing men. Like, I mean, it's true. Like, almost all the guys who come to me for coaching, they all say, like, almost all of them say, I just don't have any guy friends. I don't know how to make guy friends, you know? All the guy friends I've had, you know, I've lost touch with them. Like, I need guy friends. And so there's that part of it too. It's like, just having connection with other men is a big deal.
Yeah. I know that a lot of guys lose that after, let's say, team sports in high school and college. And, you know, sometimes when you get into the work environment, you're not really all like getting along and hanging out. Maybe you go out for a couple of drinks, but yeah, you're right. There's the loss of community.
There is. Within. And actually, I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no,
I think also what I see is, I think a big contributing factor to adult male loneliness is that they have become enmeshed in their relationships. Mm. You know, a lot of these guys are married and they've wrapped their entire identities up in their marriage and in their relationship and in this woman. And they've lost sight of their friendships. They've lost sight of their hobbies. They've lost sight of their passions. They've lost sight of most of the other things in their life because they've become so enmeshed in their relationships.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I see that a lot too.
Yeah. I see that on both sides. Marriages or seriously long relationships. It's definitely a problem.
Yeah. It's a big problem. It's kind of insane when you think about it. Like the idea of lifelong monogamous pair bonding and then this like modern concept of, hey, I'm going to pair up with someone and we're going to meet each other's needs. We're going to make each other happy. We're going to be each other's best friend, each other's lover. We're going to entertain each other and amuse each other and solve each other's problems and do everything together and live together. It's like, that's fucking crazy. And it doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why do we have multiple friends? Because each one of us gives to that relationship, right? That one person doesn't fulfill every need in my life.
Right.
So why would one person fulfill every need in my life? It doesn't.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, you know, that's going back to like dating and relationships. Like, you know, a lot of men I have found, and they're kind of under this illusion or possibly even a delusion about what a woman or women can do for them.
Oh.
And I used to be the same way. I used to think, particularly when I was depressed, you know, and going through a real dark place, you know what I would think? If only I had a woman. If only I had a girlfriend. If only I had a partner. If only I had a woman in my life, I'd be happy. I'd be complete. All I need is if only I had a woman. That's what I would think. And that's how a lot of men think. And so, again, they have this illusion about what a woman can do for them, you know, but a woman, another person cannot make you happy or fix your problems or meet all your needs. You know, that stuff comes from within. And not only she can't do that, she doesn't want to do that. Mm. Like, what an enormous fucking burden to place on another person, you know?
Yes. I mean, where does this come from? The parenting, the mothers, like, where, I mean, where do you feel that this is showing up over and over and over in their lives?
Well, geez, I mean, I don't know that I can pinpoint one place, but I would say for the men that I work with, number one, I think it, again, comes from the toxic shame, the belief that, hey, I'm not okay just as I am. And I think it's maybe the relationship dynamic between their parents. So, I mean, look, most men are raised being taught how to please a woman. Like, that's how we're raised. Like, probably from birth, you know, our earliest caregiver is, you know, our mother. And if it's not our mother, it's probably some other woman. So we immediately are, you know, from birth, learning how to please women. And so I think we internalize that, you know, that's why we go through life thinking we need to please women and gain their approval and make them happy. And that actually repels them. It turns out it's not very attractive. But I think it comes from other places too, religion, the institution of marriage and this idea of pairing up with another person and living happily ever after. You know, that comes from society and religion and our parents. And tell you the truth, I think it comes from like media and entertainment, like cheesy romantic comedy movies. Mm. I know that sounds
Disney
kind of silly, but I mean, think about it. That's what we grow up seeing. We grow up watching like Disney movies and romantic comedy movies. And like, we believe in that stuff, these fucking fairy tales, you know?
Yeah.
Just the other day, I watched, as an example, this movie, American Underdog, which is about Kurt Warner, the NFL quarterback, like who was basically an unknown and then came to the NFL and took his team to a bunch of Super Bowls. I'm not a huge sports fan. It's a good movie, but like there's a part of the movie where like he goes to some honky tonk bar and like meets the cute bartender and they start like line dancing and then he, you know, they have this moment where their eyes lock and they obviously there's chemistry. And then he walks her to her car and she's like, you don't want to be with me. I'm like, I've got all this baggage. I'm divorced. I have children. You don't want to be with me. And he's like, why would you say that? Why wouldn't I want to be with you? You're amazing. And then she gets in her car and drives off. And then the next morning he shows up at her house with a rose and like knocks on her door. And she opens the door and she's like, what are you doing here? And like her mom and her like son are in the background. And he just like walks in and starts playing with the son and like making friends with the mom. And, you know, of course they fall in love and it's like
Hollywood.
If that happened in real life, that guy would be going to jail. That guy would have a restraining order against him. Like that shit doesn't happen in real life.
Yeah.
But we grow up seeing that shit happen. All the TV shows we watch, all the movies we watch, like those are the messages we internalize growing up. So,
yeah.
It's like nobody sits us down and tells us the truth.
This is not real, honey. You might like the movie, but it's not real. Well, the good thing is, thank God that those beliefs can be altered and changed. And I think knowing that, like, that you have the option and you can do the work, but you can change those beliefs. And I think that's the most powerful thing, too.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, you have to learn a lot of these lessons the hard way. Because again, nobody really sits down to tell us the truth about these things, you know?
Right.
About most of the stuff in life, whether it's going to college, getting a corporate job, buying a house, getting married,
I mean, our parents taught us what they knew.
Yeah.
And I didn't know until probably 30. I think 30 was the age where I had such a rough relationship with my father growing up and for so many years. And that something smacked. Like, I went through this personal development training thing and it smacked me in the head. It was like, you know what? Your father was human. He had limited tools. He grew up the way he grew up and it didn't ever change. And so I was like, oh my God, I put my parents on pedestals when I'm a kid. And I think most kids do. They're perfect. They're all knowing. They're not God, but they know what they're saying. And when you realize they don't know a fucking thing.
Yeah. Right.
And then let me give them some forgiveness here.
I think humans tend to have this weird quirk where they want you to make the same decisions they made, even though those decisions didn't make them happy. I don't want to get married. Personally, I think, I love love and romance and having a partner, but just getting married itself, I think is crazy. And I have a lot of friends who are like, aren't you going to get married? Don't you want to get married? I'm like, you're married and you're fucking miserable. Why are you telling me to do the same thing you did when it didn't work out for you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're divorced twice. Why are you telling me to get married? People seem to want you to, again, follow the same path and make the same decisions they did, even if it didn't work out for them,
Yeah. There's just this, this is normal. This is what you're supposed to do in life. And if you don't, you're kind of looked at as different. So I think a lot of people conform.
Yeah.
Even if it didn't work out.
Yeah. And again, nobody actually sits you down and tells you the truth. Like, nobody ever says to you, hey, your college degree might actually be worthless, or hey, that corporate job might actually be so toxic and so unfulfilling that it sucks your soul, or hey, buying that house might turn into a giant money pit, or your marriage might end in a really bitter, expensive, nasty divorce. Like, nobody tells us that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we learn
that's
the hard
the
way.
Truth,
Yeah, it's very true. But you know what? I think your journey is so cool because I think we all have our own journeys, but turning that into helping guys and creating a man's tribe or a man's, the connection that's so needed is just, really amazing. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Is there anything that I haven't really asked you or talked about that you want to share with everybody here?
Not that I can think of. I mean, you tell me.
Okay.
If there's anything else you want to know, I'm happy to share it.
Well, I think everybody will have at least your website. Do you want to shout out your handles or anything that you've got going on?
Yeah, I mean, tonyendelman.com is my website. That's where you can read a lot of my writing. And if anyone wants to work with me, I do free introductory calls just to make sure we're a good fit, vibe with each other. So people can schedule an intro call with me on my website. I'm not big on social media. I'm not a fan. I mean, it's bad for the psyche, I think. So I would say people go to my website and then, of course, go get the big stick, particularly if you're familiar with Dr. Glover's work, you know, the Big Stick goes far beyond Nowhere, Mr. Nice Guy. It's like you said at the very beginning, it encapsulates 40 years of Dr. Glover's teachings and wisdom. So go get the Big Stick. Amazing. That would be the only other thing I hope people would do.
Okay. Okay. One last question for you before I leave everybody a nice outro here. What was one of your favorite dates and what was it?
One of my favorite dates? Oh, man. Gee, that's a good question. You know what? This is going to sound really, really contradictory to what I was talking about earlier, but one of my favorite first dates was with the woman who ended up dumping me very, very cruelly. We just had the most, and I actually write about this in the Big Stick. You know, I had just moved to New Orleans. So it was maybe 3 or 4 months after I moved to New Orleans when I met this woman. And we just had the most like classic, I don't know if you've ever been to New Orleans or Nolens, but we just had the most quintessential, like classic New Orleans night. Like we had this amazing like Creole dinner, and then we went to like Frenchman Street and saw this amazing live music. And it was just like this beautiful romp through the city.
Very cool.
That sort of culminated with us like, you know, making out in her car. But it was just like this quintessential New Orleans date night that I remember very vividly. I've had a few of those, but you know, New Orleans is a very romantic city.
So. Yeah. It's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. All right. Well, as we wrap up this fascinating conversation I've had, Tony Endelman, I want to express my heartfelt thanks for sharing your insights and experiences. And to you, our listeners, your support and engagement make this journey truly rewarding. And remember to follow and subscribe to the Down and Dirty Podcast for more inspiring conversations. And don't forget to check out all my socials. Until next time, keep exploring, stay curious, and thank you for tuning in.
If you enjoyed today's episode and want to support podcasts like ours, then please hit that subscribe button, leave a 5-star rating, and or invite others to listen. Your support is what helps us grow and continue to bring you valuable content. Thanks for hanging out with us on today's episode. Let's stay connected. You can find me on Instagram at Celeste More Image, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on today's discussion. For all the links, resources, and additional information mentioned in this episode, check out the show notes on my website, CelesteMore.com. That's all for now, but stay tuned for our next episode where we'll dive into more exciting topics. Until then, see you next time, friends.